You're in the loop. We're here to discuss the ups, downs, and sideways of the sport of figure skating, and maybe give you +5 GOV along the way. Let's introduce this week's hosts. Hi, I'm Yogita, and I spent this week receiving rage against both Russia and Twitter.
Hi, I'm Carr, and you heard me on the men's episode because I love figure skating so much. I love it here. My therapist has heard so much more about figure skating at the Olympics than she has ever cared to know.
Oh boy.
Yeah, so welcome to the women's episode.
AKA Righteous Fury.
Yeah, we want to get started before we delve into the results with an overview of ye old doping scandal, which has been weighing over the Olympics, figure skating especially, but the Olympics in general because of how, you know, worldwide it's gotten. It's been weighing over it since February 7th. So anything we say about the women's event is overshadowed by the CAS, the Court of Arbitration for Sports, decision to allow Kamila Valieva to compete after testing positive for trimetazidine. So we just want to go over the timeline and the known information as of recording and share our thoughts on the matter. So here you go.
So let's first set up our timeline. We're going to try and be as factual as possible here. We don't want to mess any information up. This is very important.
We will be including links to our sources in the description of the episode.
Yep.
And as we said, this is what we have at the time of recording.
Okay, so here is the known timeline as of recording. So on December 25th, during Russian nationals, the Russian anti-doping agency got a urine sample from Kamila Valieva. This sample is then sent to an official WADA testing laboratory in Stockholm. On February 7th, the laboratory reports that Kamila's sample tested positive for 2.1 nanograms per milliliter of trimetazidine, aka TMZ, a drug that has actually been banned by WADA since 2014. On February 8th, Rosado suspends Kamila, preventing her from competing in the Olympics. This now brings the validity of the team event into question. On February 9th, Kamila and her team challenges the suspension and a hearing takes place. The Disciplinary Anti-Doping Committee of Russia revokes the suspension. On February 11th, the International Testing Agency, ITA, on behalf of the IOC, appeals the decision to lift the suspension, and WADA joins them in their petition. The Court for Arbitration and Sport, CAS, takes on the hearing. The following day, on February 12th, the ISU also joins them in their petition. The hearing then takes place on February 13th, and on February 14th, the decision is released. And it was decided by CAS, that Kamila is allowed to compete at the Olympics. This ruling from CAS was merely over whether Kamila should be provisionally suspended, not whether Kamila actually violated the anti-doping rules. There still needs to be an investigation into that matter that will happen post-Olympics.
I was counting as you read. That's 7 whole organizations that have been involved in this. Like, it's crazy to me how international and, like, you know, wide this has gotten, that it's reported on by, you know, huge news sources in every country.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. And it's also, like, it's the Olympics happening right now. So obviously this is going to have a huge international appeal. And, like, we'll discuss more about, like, Russia later on. But Russia is currently still, like, living out their sentence for their past statewide doping situation that was happening during the 2014 Olympics. So there's just a lot at stake on this decision. So let's talk about Kamila's blood sample to begin with. So obviously she tested positive for TMZ, 2.1 nanograms per milliliter. There has been other reports that they were arguing that this was contamination. The amount of TMZ that was found in her sample is about 200 times more than prior athletes who have successfully argued contamination for TMZ. In addition to TMZ, Kamila also tested positive for hypoxin and L-carnitine, these drugs are not on the banned list for WADA, but you would not really expect them to be taken by a healthy 15-year-old. Hypoxin, in particular, is known to help enhance the performance of athletes, and the U.S. ADA actually tried to ban hypoxin in 2017, but they were not successful. She listed them on her, like, her doping forms. Like, this is known that she was taking hypoxin and L-carnitine. It's not that, like, oh, it just suddenly appears. They were known. It's just that these drugs themselves are known to help with performance enhancing. Particularly, they are help with recovery specifically. Not necessarily, like, performance themselves, but, like, being able to, like, recover faster and thus being able to practice longer and, like, be able to spend more time in training compared to athletes who aren't taking these, which still will give them an unfair advantage when they do compete because they have had longer times for training compared to other clean athletes who aren't taking these.
Yeah, so as mentioned, Camila and Rasada, the Russian anti-doping agency's defense is that Camila's grandfather sometimes takes trimetazidine, and Camila was cross-contaminated due to proximity with him. This can be found on the CAS document, which will be in our links. The athlete's mother, Camila's mother, testified that the athlete's grandfather regularly drives her to the first and second daily training sessions, waits for her at the training center until training is over, and then drives her back home, where he stays with the athlete during lunch break. They added evidence to this with a video recording of the athlete's grandfather, Camila's grandfather, showing her grandfather with a package of trimetazidine MV in his car. So they argue that Camila could have consumed a product which had been contaminated by the drugs used in her inner circle. To quote the document, the athlete assumes that the contamination occurred through dishes used by the athlete and the athlete's grandfather through drinking liquid from the same glass as well. The athlete, together with her representative, intend to conduct further investigation and present the results at the main hearings.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, obviously that is, like, that is not impossible. But, like, what a reach.
Yeah, grandfather does not have a prescription for TMZ, though apparently you don't need a prescription for TMZ in Russia.
Yeah.
But this argument in general, it's just, like, too many far-reaching things.
It is suspicious. It is incredibly, like, oh, what? It's incredibly coincidental. Like you said before, the amount of trimetazidine found in her sample was 200 times more than another athlete who had successfully argued contamination. And so the numbers do not really add up.
Yeah. An expert on the side of the ITA testified that the amount of TMZ found in her system is typical of a person reaching, like, the end of, like, the excretion cycle for TMZ. So it is still likely that the TMZ in her system was due to her actually taking it and not through contamination.
And it also stands to be said, you know, that could back up her grandfather argument. The test results were delayed due to a backlog at the WADA lab in Stockholm. I remember Tilda mentioning that labs are really understaffed in the pandemic.
Yeah, they definitely in Sweden, they had, like, an increase in COVID cases during this time as well, which decreased personnel at the lab, which led to partially the delay of the sample. Typically, according to Rosada, they would get their sample back within 20 days of sending the sample, and they instead got it back in 44 days after sending the sample. So it was twice as long as the expected time to get the sample.
Yeah, and because of that delay, Camila was unable to request testing of her second sample or her B sample, which will provide more evidence. But yeah, the time period of it, and we will discuss this later when we talk about CAS's reasoning, the time period also made it impossible for Camila to gather more evidence in her favor, especially since she was already in Beijing at the time that the decision came out.
So per CAS's reasoning, they mainly fell upon three arguments. One, she is a protected person per WADA guidelines. She is under 16. Not allowing her to compete would cause her irreparable harm, and that her test results, as we just discussed, came back too late through no fault of Camila's. So due to the decision from Cass in response, the IOC then decided that they would not hold a medal ceremony for the figure skating women's individual event if Camilla podiumed. In addition, if she podiumed, they would also not hold a victory ceremony. They delayed the team event medal ceremony, and they also requested that the ISU allow one additional woman to qualify for the free skate, thus forcing 7 women to skate in 1 warm-up group.
Like, we'll go in, we'll talk a lot more about how the decision in favor of Camilla unfairly affects other skaters, but that's something we've never seen, you know, 7 women in 1 warm-up group. That was really unfair and dangerous.
Yeah, definitely. One, having more people than you expect on the ice during warm-up could definitely, like, affect, like, how you warm up, and not being fully prepared to handle that could lead to, like, harm to, like, any of the skaters. And also, like, the women have, like, the expectation that, okay, we're gonna warm up for this amount of period and we'll be on the ice back within this amount of period. So adding one additional skater extends that time for that they have to, like, wait and, like, warm up. And it's just also mentally stressful for the women as well. So all around, not ideal.
I think I mentioned this in an update I recorded for the men's episode. I believe I speak for all of us on the ITL team that we do not agree with the decision to allow Camilla to skate. Obviously, it's already happened. We can't change that. But, you know, we want to talk a bit about why we think it's incorrect. Because, you know, we're not just mad that she's competing. You know, there are reasons, completely fair reasons to the other athletes and to Camilla, that this shouldn't have been decided.
So one of the main arguments from the Court of Arbitration for Sport is that this not allowing Camilla to compete will cause her irreparable harm. Now, this is purely in the legal sense, where irreparable harm is defined as harm or loss of any sort that cannot be compensated for with money at a later time. In this case, irreparable harm would be Olympic gold, which Camilla was at the time the favorite to win. It does make me question, like, what other meanings of irreparable harm they're not really taking into account here, because yes, the lack of monetary gain that if she could get back, like, there's no way you can compensate someone for losing the opportunity for Olympic gold. But at the same time, we saw her in practice throughout the week. We saw what happened to her during her programs, and you can't tell me that, like, this girl has not been harmed through this entire process. It's truly heartbreaking for Camilla and for the other skaters who are competing with her on the ice.
I want to add that, like, obviously the irreparable harm was the Olympic gold. And that makes me question, you know, what if this happened to a lower ranked athlete or one that, you know, was not favored to win or medal? That irreparable harm of Olympic gold is not an option for them. So how would that argument have applied to them? That just makes me curious. It seems like preferential treatment based on results. And that is just one of many things that was unfair to the athletes.
Yeah, I agree. And like, I once again, I like want to question, like, how this has really affected her mentally. Because I think one image that really will never get out of my head is seeing her by herself in the mix zone, wearing her hoodie and just, like, having all of these reporters try to ask her questions, and, like, she's just, like, trying to get by and, like, not respond to anybody. And it was, like, her coaching team truly let her down there.
They left her to the wolves.
They should have protected her throughout this entire thing, and they didn't. And we'll talk more about her coaching team in a little bit, but she's been, like, dragged through the mud in, like, every international media, and it's honestly, like, unfair for her. And she wouldn't have gotten this treatment if they had decided to keep her suspended.
I can only believe it's, you know, it's unlikely that CAS, when they, you know, considered their irreparable harm, it's unlikely that they considered the immense psychological damage, or, you know, even possible physical damage that could have resulted you know, from forcing her to skate by allowing her to continue in the limelight. You know, the scandal was already known by the time the women's event came around. You know, people worldwide had already heard about this. And keeping her skating, keeping her on the ice, just invited further harm. You know, people, the cameras continued to follow her, continued to report on her. And, you know, people who may not be in the know of figure skating know nothing better than to hate on her or Russia further, which, you know, may be a minor thing, but still wouldn't make her feel good because this was so broadcasted publicly. By forcing her to skate, you know, she had two options. She could compete, she could do well, and she could medal. And one, cause the ceremonies to be taken away from her and the other medalists, and eventually have her results and her medal scrutinized until they would be likely taken away, which would cause more shame and mudslinging from the media. Or, as we saw, she could possibly succumb to the pressure of the situation, not perform well, miss a medal, and deal with the shame of falling to that on the most worldwide stage in figure skating and the following fallout, which is what we saw. You know, one of those happened, and we saw the harsh repercussions of it hitting everyone in the vicinity. You know, it's the CAS, if they did consider her mental and physical health in this decision, they weighed it against Olympic gold and results, and it lost. And, you know, the things that followed post the free skate are partially on their hands. You know, it's partially their responsibility.
So, as we also discussed, one of the other reasonings for CAS's decision was serious issues of untimely notification, in which the sample took 44 days instead of the standard 20, which led to the argument that Camilla was unable to have her B-sample analyzed in time, which she has the right to, and was unable to gather evidence in her favor in time. So this, to me, is the most reasonable argument that CAS put forward. It makes sense as to why they would want to allow her to compete still, given that the timing was not ideal. But, like, I understand the decision, but I don't agree with the decision.
I think the extenuating circumstances of the pandemic causing the results to be delayed should be taken into consideration. And like you said, while on its own, this is a reasonable argument, you know, compared with the other arguments and the fact that, you know, she still did test positive. It's not like this caused a wrong test, I guess. I don't think it's enough to weigh it in favor of her.
Yeah, they also did argue that because she also had a history of testing negative as well, and she had been tested before the December 25th date and after the December 25th date, and both of those were negative tests, that she should have the benefit of the doubt here. And this kind of moves on to the next argument that they made, was her age, specifically her being a protected person, which is a minor below the age of 16 years old, and their argument was that they needed a lower standard of evidence than a balance of probability to be applied, which, one, seems not correct. Just because you're a minor does not mean that you shouldn't have the same level of scrutiny that everybody else is. You tested positive for doping, so you should still have that same level of scrutiny. And also, WADA released a statement after the decision came out and stated that in that document stated, it appears that the CAS panel decided not to apply the terms of the code, which does not allow for specific exceptions to be made in relation to mandatory provisional suspensions for protected persons.
It just came out recently, the IOC president, Thomas Bach, I think he held a press conference where he expressed disdain for the situation and how Camilla's coaching team handled it and how he would like it, you know, further investigation to be done into it.
It's actually kind of important to note here that while RSADA was the one, the Russian anti-doping agency was the one that suspended Camilla, and it wasn't RSADA that rescinded her suspension. It is another arm of RSADA called the Disciplinary Anti-Doping Committee, I believe. Rosada actually still believes that. According to the decision doc, Rosada was pro Camilla getting suspended again.
I wanted to bring in a case, you know, going along with the protected person. And this aligns with what you said, you know, WADA's statement that they, you know, should not give exceptions for minors. This was an ISU case. This was not Olympic. So it is different. When Yedim Kim, who competed here, was 13, she missed a doping test, not knowing she had been selected. The ISU ultimately decided not to go through with the proper consequences, but they released a document stating how it was her responsibility to be there, and that, you know, even though she was young, she should still be prepared to face the consequences. To paraphrase, they stated how it is much like how a child in school would still be expected to face consequences for misbehaving. And it was kind of heartbreaking. Yedim gave an interview, or mentioned in an interview, the discomfort that this situation was making her feel here.
It's kind of disconcerting that here is Yedim Kim, when she was 13, expected to know the rules and follow the rules and be tried according to rules. Whereas Camilla, one of her main arguments for getting her off is because she was younger than 16 and a protected person, that she was allowed to have a lower standard of evidence.
Going off of that, I think the only, you know, change, you know, major change to be made when it's a minor is that, you know, the ramifications, or not the ramifications, the responsibility should be with the adults in their situation, which is Camila's case. You know, she's only 15 and it is her coaching team that she trusts and relies on.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think we stated this yet, but we fully believe that Camilla is the victim here, and that the ones that need to be held accountable are the adults in her life who allowed this to happen, her coaching team, at the Russian Federation, Skating Federation, etc.
She's a protected person. She is to be protected. And we agree with that.
This does bring up the argument of, like, whether we should raise the age limit for senior-level skaters. If she can't be punished as a senior skater, then she shouldn't be skating as a senior. It feels like a little bit of common sense there. And we've seen this trend in the Russian skaters that they can do these incredible jumps at a really young age, but as they go through puberty, as they get older, they can't jump anymore. They are facing severe injuries. They can barely land triples, let alone the quads that they grew up doing. So maybe we should raise the standards for seniors as a reason to help delay some of that harm that these Russian young ladies are going through.
Yeah, and we'll talk about this a bit later, but, you know, Camilla is only 15, and yet all of this was broadcast for the entire world to see. You know, that's not healthy for someone so young.
I do want to, like, briefly bring up some other cases of suspension in skating, and how, like, these have done so much harm for these individuals.
Mm-hmm. How differently they were handled.
Yeah. So Jessica Callang, a para skater from the U.S., tested positive for 4-CPA, which is a chemical compound that is found in a typical WADA banned drug, and was suspended by USADA from competition for 8 months. And this compound actually ended up originating from her makeup, not from the drug that WADA originally assumed it was from. And the reason why it was picked up was because it was assumed that the only way to find this compound was from this one drug, which made it very difficult for her to fight back against the suspension. And she ended up in a very long legal battle to get unsuspended.
Jessica Callang mentioned on Twitter how traumatizing this situation is for her. And I don't remember where it was mentioned, but, you know, she was able to get through this with the help of an attorney, which, you know, is not a privilege that everyone will have. And, you know, in other skaters who were treated more harshly, Carolina Costner was suspended for 16 months for helping her boyfriend at the time evade anti-doping control.
She lied, saying that he was not in her apartment at the time, but she was completely unaware, per her argument, that he was actually taking doping drugs. But yeah, she never touched any PEDs herself, but she still was suspended for 16 months.
And, you know, not in the realm of figure skating, which does change the situation, obviously, you know, there are even more cases where people have been treated harshly, much harsher than Camila is, or receiving harsher consequences. And, you know, it just makes the argument for her to stay competing so much more wild and so much more unbelievable to the general public.
Within the skating community, this has not been a happy incident. The overall reaction to this decision from past skaters has been with anger and disappointment. You can have Yuna Kim commenting about skating, and she doesn't comment about skating anymore.
If you have Yuna Kim talking about competitive skating, you have done wrong. There are countless skaters that have spoken up about it. You know, it wouldn't be in the interest of time to name them all, but you can see everywhere that people are speaking up about this, and rightfully so, and we're glad to see it. Before we head into, you know, talking about the actual women's event, just a bit more that we want to say on the topic of doping in Russia is that this is not new. And as we mentioned earlier, the results of Camila's sample, you know, bring us back to Russian women and the, you know, meteoric rise of Russian women's technical content over the past few years.
As many of us are aware, Russia has been caught doing state-approved doping for the 2014 Olympics and has been not allowed to compete at Russia at the Olympics since 2018. The ban on Russia does end at the end of this year, but the results of this incident might bring that into question again. Atari Tutberidze, the head of the Sambo 70, has also spoken in the past about the use of meldonium in Russia before it was banned by WADA, calling it a vitamin that helps with recovery from fatigue, and how that at the time of this interview has to go find something new to help replace meldonium.
Her language is, you know, incredibly suspect.
It really is important to call all of Sambo 70 into blame here for this. And once again, the IOC president spoke out saying that he wants the entirety of Valieva's entourage, including the team at Sambo 70, to be investigated. So we hope that they actually do end up investigating her.
With, you know, the investigation, you know, being done by the ICA on behalf of WADA and the IOC looking into it, I believe the US is able to investigate events where athletes are caught doping that US athletes are also competing at due to the Rodchenkov Act, named after a whistleblower for doping.
I hope something comes of this incident. We have all been very much aware of what has happened at Sambo 70 to all the women, young women under Ethery's coaching who have competed for 1 to 2 years and then never can jump again. It is heartbreaking what keeps happening to these skaters. And hopefully this incident helps bring some light to the situation. And now that she does have international eyes on her, it's very hard to put the situation to bed.
There is momentum, and we pray it keeps going.
Okay, so on to the actual event at the Olympics. Also known as how much can the judges underscore your faves while pushing the Russians ahead?
The answer is very.
So, the podium at the Olympics for the women's individual event was Anna Shcherbakova of Russia in gold, Alexandra Trusova of Russia for silver, and Kari Sakamoto of Japan in bronze.
Okay, so to start off discussion of the women's event, I'm going to invite the beast that is Yogita on technical elements. Be free. Talk about cute.
Oh, God. Okay, let's talk about scoring, guys. Let's talk about the tech panel, firstly. Before we even talk about scoring, scoring is actually not what matters here. What matters here is the tech panel and the goal of the tech panel. The purpose of the tech panel is to watch your elements that each skater is doing and if they are doing the element incorrectly, or if they land incorrectly, or if they just don't do the element at all to call that out. So the judges are aware and can score them with that knowledge. So remember, for those who are watching the Olympic coverage, the only real information you get about anything in from the tech box is that yellow means your element is under review.
I hate those Wordle boxes.
So if you paid attention to any of the non-Russian skates, but this was pretty true across both the short and the free, you would notice that most of the girls who went Russian were getting pretty harsh tech calls. Like, this was a very surprisingly harsh tech paddle, right? Like, there were so many under-rotation calls.
Those tech boxes were straight bananas. They were so yellow.
So you would see so many edge calls, so many under-rotation calls, and then you see the Russians, and they don't have anything. Like, for instance, in the short, Kamila Valieva stepped out of her triple axel and did a bad combo, which I believe should have been called under, did not get an under-rotation call. Anna Sherbakova does a triple lutz. Her lutz edge is flat. It's always been flat. She's never gotten called on it.
And in contrast, Wakaba Higuchi received a under-rotation call on the triple toe of her combo, and I was like, where'd you pull that from? Explain it to me.
She also got a unclear edge and a cue on her flip, which, what, Wakaba, you take out the flip. Just take out the flip. You can do a loop. Looking across this protocol sheet gives me a headache, honestly. And, you know, I am happy for any and all calls. I much prefer a strict tech panel to an easy tech panel, because yeah, make the calls. This is how you tell the skaters like where they need to show improvements, right? But make the calls consistently and call everybody if you're going to be a strict tech panel. That's just extremely disappointing. It's been true across this entire quad that we've seen strict tech panels be easy on the Russians like every time, and it's do your job. Just please do your job. I just want to move on quickly and talk about Q. One, for those who don't know, Q is a call if your jump is on the quarter mark. And it's different from an under rotation, because if you get an under rotation, that decreases the base value of your jump. Whereas Q, your base value remains the same, but it's an indicator to the judges to give you lower GEOE. One, it is pretty difficult to tell with the naked eye, which is what the tech panel is using, to really tell whether a jump is under rotated or just at the quarter mark. And obviously, if the tech panel had more advanced technology to use to tell this, this would not be a problem. But they don't. So this ultimately really ends up making Q a political tool that the judges can use for skaters that they're like, okay, do you typically under-rotate? Not really, so it's probably not under-rotation call. So we'll just give you a Q just to be safe. Whereas people who are known to under-rotate will just get the under-rotation call, even if they are a Q.
You know, like Yogita said, 100% agree, a strict tech panel is fine, preferable even, as long as it is consistent. That is all we ask for, is, you know, all we ask for is fairness. Weird. What a weird concept.
Who would have thought that all we really wanted from this sport was fair scoring decisions? And obviously, this isn't just for the women. We want fair scoring across the board for every single discipline.
But it is just so egregious in the women when you bring in the Russians.
Yeah, it is extremely obvious with the women. Okay, I don't really want to talk too much more on the topic of Kamila. We've already exhausted half this episode talking about her situation. But we really do need to talk about her scoring here. She scored an 82.16 in the short with errors on both her triple axel and her combo. While skaters like Wakaba Higuchi of Japan skated clean, though according to the judges she didn't, yet scored 10 points below her. In fact, Wakaba scored lower here than she did in the team event where she only had a double axel. The judges didn't really penalize Kamila on her triple axel and her triple up triple toe. In fact, she got a really high GOE on her combo, even though she made a major mistake at the end of it. So
yeah, it is just such an obvious show of biased judging, you know, not even to bring, you know, PCS into the factor.
We can do another episode. We can just do a whole episode on PCS at this point.
God, we really could. Yeah. Following the short program, Kamila had a free program that was riddled with mistakes and landed her in fourth overall. And I think her score was much lower than expected, just considering how overscored she is usually.
I was fully prepared to watch her get bronze. Like,
absolutely, same.
I think I even tweeted that, like, wow, she shouldn't get bronze, but she will. And then she didn't. I was like, this is not compute with my knowledge of how this sport works.
Even looking at the short program just 2 days earlier, you know, you would think she would get overscored the same way, even with her mistakes. And, you know, her being in fourth place did lead to the medal ceremony actually being held, which is a whole, you know, situation otherwise. There are, like, no words to describe how it felt to watch her in during and after her free program. Like, she is the victim of all of this, and it's so tragic for, you know, someone so young to go through this. Anyways, on to the actual medalists.
Okay, Anna Shcherbakova and Alexandra Trusova.
We kind of want to talk about them together to just compare and contrast them a bit, because they broke onto the senior scene after Pyeongchang with Aliona Kostornaya, who sadly was not here. And, you know, they've both been, you know, using quads to their advantage since, you know, before they debuted as seniors, and since, you know, to win gold at every opportunity. You know, here, Sasha, Alexandra, here too referred to by as Sasha, landed 5 quads, a lot of which, you know, were of questionable quality, as opposed to Anna's 2 quad flips, which she just somehow managed to get back in time for competition after consistently messing up or falling on them in practice.
When you say quad flip, where I have, like, the quad in quotation marks, because the pre-rotation on those jumps.
Add that to the list of technical issues with these jumps. But they've been getting incredibly wild scores since their senior debut. You know, they've been, you know, setting and, you know, subsequently breaking world records all along the way. And when they do go up against each other, it seems like Anna consistently or more often comes out on top, with I believe she usually gets higher PCS, and she seems to have more federation and coach backing, which, you know, seems to have led to her coming out on top here. Sasha did win the free program by 2 points, and also her base value here of 95.39 was higher than Nathan Chen of the men's free skates base value of 94.34. So there's that. But unfortunately, the 2-point lead that Sasha had in the free program did not beat the 6-point lead Anna had on her after the short program, where Sasha fell on her triple axel attempt.
Well, also, let's talk about ridiculousness of Sasha's short program score of 74.60 with a fall.
Once again, beat Wakaba Higuchi with an actual clean triple axel and incredible performance and skating skills.
And got higher components than Wakaba Higuchi.
Sasha's PCS are like, I feel like she gets overscored the most on PCS of the Russian girls.
Okay, let's talk about Sasha's components, for instance. Sasha got really, really high components, but when you look at her free skate, for instance, you can tell that it's mostly just a jumping fest. She's spending most of her energy setting up for her jumps, and she's not really performing, and the composition of the program because of that is really poor. It's not very complete from a performance perspective. It's great from, like, a technical perspective for her, but there's nothing else to it. So she should, in theory, get really low points in performance and composition because program isn't there, for instance. Also, her skating skills, especially when compared to the other women, are not as great. For instance, compare her to Kari Sakamoto, and this is true for Anna as well. If you watch Kari skate, you can see it takes her maybe 3-4 crossovers to really get from one side of the rink to the other. She knows how to move very quickly on the ice. In comparison, Anna and Sasha take a lot longer to move across the ice. They require a lot more movement, a lot more crossovers to cross from one end of the ice to the other. And in general, they're just a lot more labored when they are skating. When you look at them, they don't seem as if it's as easy for them to just move on the ice, which adds to also the performance once again. If you can't make it seem easy, you're not giving as good of a performance as someone who is making it seem very easy.
Yeah, so Sasha and Anna, you know, they've been going head-to-head as the two quad girls for the past quad. Funny how often that word shows up. That build-up to the Olympics that Sasha and Anna created was kind of brushed aside when Camila, the gold medal favorite Camila, got added into the mix. And, you know, she ended up not medaling, which just created so much chaos. And that chaos played a part in what came after the free program.
So for those of you who did not watch, after Camila got her score, Camila walked backstage in tears and followed by the cameraman, which honestly, she's 15 years old, leave her alone. And then Anna, who won gold, was just like sitting in the green room and literally with like no emotion on her face.
Yeah, she looked lost.
And Sasha was just screaming behind the boards in tears. And it's, in that whole mess of things, I don't even know where Ettore went. Like, I didn't see her.
She was not there, that's for sure.
It's just very disturbing. I watched a compilation recently of the reactions of the past Olympic gold medalists in women's skating. And you see them, like, light up in excitement, go and hug their coach, and like, they're just, like, screams of joy, et cetera, et cetera. And then you, like, look back at, like, 2018, where Alina Zagitova won gold, and she was also sitting by herself in the green room with a plushie, and, like, also very little emotion on her face. And now we have Anna, who after the, in the press conference afterwards, said she just was feeling empty inside. And can you imagine winning the biggest event of your sport and feeling empty inside?
It just speaks so much to, you know, her mental state and the state of the mental space of, you know, that camp. She was also, I think she was also quoted as saying that she felt like she was just in the right place at the right time. None of the reactions from the Russian girls were normal or healthy. They were the reactions of victims of abuse and trauma, and it's almost hard to describe what it felt to watch that happen live. You know, the cameras stayed up for a decently long time, you know, so we could see the reactions of these incredibly young girls on a worldwide stage. You know, like Sasha was, you know, screaming about how she didn't want to skate again and that she hated it here. That was live translated by Johnny Weir on NBC's commentary.
Later in the press conference, Sasha admitted to still being disappointed with silver, and said that her words post the free skate were emotion speaking. But you have to really look at it from Sasha's point of view. This is a young girl who was told, if you could land the quads, you could win the gold. And she did it. She landed the quads. Yet she didn't win. And she's, if you look back on her skating throughout the past quad, she was the girl everybody thought would be the one winning all the golds. And she hasn't won any.
Sasha is, you know, in a training camp and to some extent in a sport where your results and your medals dictate your value. And, you know, getting silver, especially after, like you said, a quad of, you know, a whole quad of being expected to win gold and told that she will win gold if she lands these, you know, in her situation, that her reaction is not a tantrum, it's a breakdown. It's a valid reaction from her. And it's heartbreaking that, you know, she's been taught to place so much value on that gold.
All of these young women have been competing against each other for Ettore's attention, for gold, for the entirety of the past quad. And it's a do or die situation for them, right? They either win gold or they don't, and they lose favor within the camp. So it's very traumatizing to really see the results of this. We saw a brief look into this in 2018 with the rivalry between Alina Zagitova and Evgenia Medvedeva, but it's like 100 times worse here.
Like we said, you know, we don't know where Ettore went after the free skate. Ettore had 3 students here, all competing for medals, and it seems that she could only go to one of them, even though there are multiple people on that team there. But I don't even know where she was after the free skate. You know, I assume she had went back with Camila, who, by the way, was not being, you know, comforted or led backstage by Eteri, her literal coach. It was Olga Chernosvitova, the One TV sports broadcast director. And I think the fact that Eteri was nowhere to be seen, you know, speaks so much to the environment at that camp and how bad it is. So I watched with Johnny and Tara's commentary. I turned it on during Camila because I was curious as to what they had to say because, you know, we've seen Johnny and Tara speaking up about the doping situation at the very least. But they even spoke up about, you know, the adults in the situation in Eteri's camp a bit during that. Because for the most part, during the post-free skate situation, they were speechless. You know, Johnny was trying to translate what Sasha was saying. And Tara stated that she had never seen anything like this before in her time in figure skating, in the figure skating world. And I believe it 100%. Like, that was, you know, none of the reactions of Anna, Sasha, or Camila were the reactions of people in healthy places mentally or physically, much less teenage girls on the Olympic stage. The post-free skate situation was just a very worldwide display of the ugliest parts of this sport, and fans all over, you know, not to mention the commentators, were just speechless at how this came about. You know, the state of women's figure skating over the past quad and, you know, a bit of time before then has, you know, shifted incredibly so. And I feel like the debut of Aliona, Anna, and Sasha on the senior scene, and later Daria Osacheva and Camila, has led to the abusive environment of the Sambo 70 camp coming more and more into the limelight and becoming one of figure skating's most open and harrowing secrets. And this exposure and the subsequent inaction from the most prominent and capable names in figure skating who could actually do something has led to this culmination and this shameful, heartbreaking public display of years of abuse on these young girls. And that's what we had to watch happen. And it was terrifying. And it was heartbreaking. I just cannot stress how much that, you know, this 15 to 20 minutes post the free skate just displayed how much we desperately need change within that camp and within the sport.
I think it's also really important to call out, like, how much of, like, the figure skating community has been complicit in allowing this to go on. Ted Barton, known for his Junior Grand Prix commentary, has become super pro-Eteri, even commenting in an article about how her students are thoroughbreds, which is terminology you use to describe horses, not children. It's absolutely disgusting.
You know, obviously not all of this is to be hashed out in the episode about the Olympic event, but there is just so much going on that revolves around the Sambo 70 camp that, you know, needs to be investigated and hopefully will be in the next few months. And I pray that it happens, and I pray that in the meantime, you know, we don't stop talking, you know, we, the figure skating community, because we are not in positions of power. I pray that we don't stop talking about it and remembering it and pressuring people to make that change. And while also, you know, sending support to these girls because they are victims.
Okay, so that was very emotionally charged, but it was what we needed. So as much heartache as the women's event brought us, there was still a lot of standouts and some amazing women who went out there and still put out some amazing programs on the ice, and we want to celebrate their successes at the Olympics. So first, I want to talk about Anastasia Gubanova, who represents Georgia. Previously, she represented Russia. I love her. She's so amazing. She has one of my favorite presences just in general, like just her presence on the ice.
She looks so graceful and serene out there.
She like takes advantage of like every moment on the ice, of every musical accent. She knows what she's doing out there, and she like made it work, and I'm so happy that she is out of Russia and is skating for a country that appreciates her and her talents, because she skated two clean programs here, so I am so excited to see more from her. She was also tragically robbed in components, as were many people here. But she did so well. I'm like, I will forever remember her fist bump after her last jumping pass. Like, she,
I know. I remember seeing that.
She did it. It was a success. It's really amazing to like see how much she's grown. Like 2 years ago, she could barely jump, and she's like put in the effort to regain her jumps and be consistent again. And I'm so excited to see how much further she grows as a skater, and also see her get scored correctly, because she is not a skater who should be getting sevens in components.
Absolutely not.
What in the world? She got a 30.97 in her short program for components, and what in what world? Make it make sense.
Some more faves, standouts we want to talk about. Both of the Team Korea girls, Young Yu, who came in sixth, and Yedim Kim, who came in ninth, they both put out stellar programs here. Young, unfortunately, did not land perfect rounded triple axle here. It was called downgraded in the short program and under-rotated in the free program. But she still went out there and, did it. And I'm just so proud of both of them, because they're both great skaters and, have both just come into their own as skaters of the skating generation inspired by Yana. They've become their own skaters. And I was so emotional watching both of them, man.
Yeah, they were great. They did just like come out of like skating at Four Continents, because KSU sucks, and just like we're like, you know what we should do? We should send our Olympic team to Four Continents.
God, that was so stupid.
Hey, we got Jin Four Continents champion.
I was gonna say, at least we did get that out of it, and Yedim also won bronze, I believe.
I do want to just briefly talk about Yedim, because I love her. She is one of my favorite skaters to watch. I love her jump technique. Is great, and she just floats on the ice. She has really, really soft arms that just like make her seem even more graceful, and it works really well, especially in her short program, which is such an excellent vehicle for her that really embodies like all of her skills. So I'm really excited to see how both Young and Yedim grow in the future.
Yeah, and they have both said that they plan on sticking around till 2026, so we have more of them to come, and I'm very glad for that.
Okay, Alyssa Liu of the U.S., who put out two clean programs here, and is just a beacon of light every time. Like, she's having the most fun at the Olympics, and I am so happy.
Dude, Alyssa Liu is out here spreading positivity and joy one key smash at a time.
Alyssa has had, like, a very long and tenuous series of coaching changes, from Lara Lepetsky to Massimo Scali and Jeremy Abbott, and now Christy Crowell and Drew Meekins, which is a lot. Especially for a young skater who's, like, still trying to figure out her technique and still trying to figure out, like, who she is as a performer. All those coaching changes would actually help justify, like, any mistakes. But, like, hey, she was good. She was clean. Her protocols don't say she was clean, but
she was clean in our hearts.
We've already talked about the strict tech panel, but she went out there. She did the best that she can do, and she, like, really was just, like, a light of joy. I really want to just, like, speak to, like, Alyssa's, like, improvement over, like, since she first debuted, because I remember watching Alyssa as a junior, and she was the American with the jumps, right? Everyone would talk about her, and they'd be like, she can jump. She's a little jumping bean. But she didn't have, like, the skating skills and performance quality that to really back up those jumps. And, like, unfortunately, as she's gotten older and she's grown taller, she's lost, like, the ability to really do her quads, and, like, her triple axel here was downgraded. But, like, her performance was, like, so much fun. Like, I really enjoy watching Alyssa.
Alyssa has grown such a performance quality. Like, they just go out there and, like, take the ice with a smile, and she finishes her skate with a smile. Two things that I want to shout out about Alyssa that aren't really about, you know, their skills or talents on the ice. One is, we say that Alyssa has been a beacon of positivity at the Olympics. It was, like, almost immediately after the free program concluded, she was doing an Instagram live talking about how close she is with Young Yoo and Yeonim Kim of Korea. And she just keeps raving about, like, you know, her friends here and how excited she is that they did well. And it brings to mind our interview with Camden, where he stated so confidently that skating for him is about the friendships. He was right then, and he still is. You know, Alyssa just brings a breath of fresh air about positivity and mindset to figure skating. You know, it wasn't about doing perfect, but, you know, doing her best and having a good time. And I just think that, you know, they've grown such a good mentality about figure skating. And I'm very proud of that and happy for that in her.
I also want to quickly shout out Karen Chen.
She is one of the most beautiful skaters I've ever seen.
I'm so mad with Karen Chen.
No, genuinely.
And she had to skate 4 times here because she skated at the team event.
Karen also revealed that she sprained her ankle here in Beijing. So she was skating 4 programs on that.
Like, she didn't have the 2 performances that she wanted to have here in the women's individual event, but she had, like, an amazing redemption skate during the team event free. She deserves the world, and I hope that she still had, like, a good time here, because I'm always happy to see Karen skate.
Just want to send out a message of support for her that, you know, we love her and love what she brings to skating. I want to quickly shout out to Ekaterina Kurakova from Poland, who finished in 12th. She went from 24th to 12th. She was the first clean program of the night, and continued to be the only clean program for a long time. Clean program, complete with happy tears at the end.
She like, pinched herself at the end of her program.
It was so sweet.
She's another one of those, like, happy bean skaters. I hope she and Alyssa are friends. But, I'm so happy for her. Like, going from 24th to 12th is absolutely insane. Super proud of her, super happy for her. She, like, definitely put out the skate of her life, and I hope she looks back on the Olympics with great joy for what she's able to do, and she continues to put out programs that she is super happy with, because a happy Katya means that we're all happy too.
And this is very important to me. Her free skate dress is my favorite color. It's my favorite shade of blue. I was watching it and I was like, man, what a good color. That was very important to me. You know, one of our last few shout outs, I want to quickly shout out Maddie Skeezus from Canada.
The Queen of Canada, actually.
Yeah, she literally came out and, like, saved Canada. She came out and she made a stand. You know, she skated 4 programs as well. And, you know, she didn't go completely clean in the short program or free program. But, like, she just showed so much dedication here for, you know, being young and being the new face of Canadian women's skating, basically. You know, following Caitlin Osmond getting an individual medal and a world title in 2018. I'm just very proud of her and her determination.
Yeah. It's a very hard job to have to skate 4 programs in 2 weeks. Like, I'm super impressed with her. I think she reminds me a lot of Caitlin Osmond and her jump technique. So I'm, like, super excited to see, like, how she continues to grow. I could definitely see Maddie becoming a 4 continents medalist in the future. Okay, let's talk about Wakaba Higuchi from Japan.
Yeah, we're gonna end with the most positive of all. Get ready for just, like, quality women skating, baby.
But Wakaba Higuchi, Japan, finished in 5th place. Should have been higher, but she should have been first after the short, but
robbed to hell and back.
Robbed to hell. Tech panel went, as we've discussed, the tech panel here was especially strict on, like, majority of the skaters who weren't Russian, but they were really strict on her. They called her combo under. They gave her both the end clear edge call and the cue on her flip, which, once again, Wakaba ditched the flip. Every tech panel knows that they need to check your flip. And so just ditch it. You don't need it. You have a triple axel. Do the loop. Also, her components were a joke. Like, she got lower components than Trusova with a fall. Like, just in general, getting lower even without a fall, she should be getting a higher components than Drusilla.
Wakaba should be getting higher components than most of these girls.
She should easily be leading the pack in components, not trailing by, like, 4+ points. Like, make it make sense. Make it make sense.
Yeah, especially after the short program, she should have been leading in components and in tech.
Yep. She was the only woman to land clean triple axels here at the Olympics. So, we love that song.
Wakaba became the 5th woman to land a triple axel at the Olympics.
Also, her short program is so great. She's just, like, pure joy throughout it. And you watch her and you're like, yes, I have to be happy for her because she's happy and I'm happy. And, like, her performance quality in general is amazing. She is, like, the best performer here, hands down. Sublime skating skills, like, probably, like, some of the best composed programs of all the women skaters here. Like, she has it all. She honestly, she should have been on this podium.
Wakaba's short program in the team event was incredible. And, like, you know, you could see a smile on her face after she landed all her jumps, which made me incredibly happy. Brought me to tears because I'm an emotional person. But she dialed that joy up to 100 here in the individual event. Like, you know, after she landed her triple axel and she landed her other jumps, she had the biggest smile I've ever seen on a skater in their program. And it stayed there for the rest of the program. And it was just, like, magical just to see how happy she was and how much that joy radiated from her. You know, she's just something else on the ice. You know, when she's on, you know, and she's, like, I could run out of words describing Wakaba. And I think both her skates, all her skates, you know, including her short program at the team event, were an Olympic moment for her because, you know, Wakaba has such incredible resilience and her refusal to give up in the face of, you know, disdain from her federation who doesn't back her as much as they do the other women, the pressure of competing itself and competing against an athlete caught doping. Finally, down to the free skate where she had a fall early on and picked herself right back up and did not let it get to her. You know, she held on and she showed her at her absolute best. And, you know, she shone so bright. And I'm just so happy for her.
But hey, she's not retiring. So 2026.
I just want to say that, like, the slew of skaters who have been like, you know, we're going to continue, like, you know, Yedem and Young, Wakaba and Kaori, Mikhail Kolyada.
Oh my god, my king. But that's a different story.
Listen, we're always allowed to bring up Misha. Speaking of Kaori Sakamoto.
Kaori Sakamoto, Olympic bronze medalist.
Dude, she got a medal. I think Yogs and I could talk about her for a whole episode.
Okay, so one, she was third after the short, but that was also a joke. But it did feel that, like, Kaori was, like, kind of getting that scores to, like, lean off of, like, some of the terror that was going on with the Russian girls. But you know what? Whatever, that's the score she deserved regardless.
She was happy, and that means I'll let it slide for now.
She got, like, 3 personal bests here, so praise be. Like, she girl-bossed her way onto the podium. Maybe Benoit was right.
Dude, Benoit said that free program would be a moment, and we all laughed at him. And now we're the clowns. We're honking our clown noses, man.
Remember when she debuted that program, and we were all like, Kaori, the piano, Kaori, the matrix, Kaori.
Anything but this.
But clearly Benoit was right. Feminism was the way to go.
Feminism always wins. Kaori Sakamoto, champion of women everywhere.
The lord and savior of figure skating, Kaori Sakamoto.
Just the girl boss memes just never fail to make me laugh. She really did girl boss her way to the podium.
In our opinion, she should be the Olympic gold medalist. She put out 2 gorgeous, clean programs with amazing jump technique. We all saw her, that clear let's edge in the short. I saw it. I saw it in real time. And, like, her playing afterwards, she was so happy about the let's because she worked so hard on fixing the edge. Which, once again, like, you call the elements correctly so the skaters know what to work on. That's the point of the tech panel. But, wow, like, her programs, like, let's be completely honest, like, at the start of the season, I was like, why are these your programs? Benoit, what are you doing? Send him to the dungeon. Like, why are you here? But, like, Kaori made them. like, Olympic moments. I'm really glad that she really, like, had an Olympic moment. Can you believe that Kari Sakamoto has never won a world medal before?
She won an Olympic medal before she won a world medal.
She hasn't won a Grand Prix final medal, though she should have in 2018.
Yeah, I would argue that she deserves more medals than she has.
But, yeah, she said in, like, post-interview that she had, like, actually been thinking about retiring after this, but like she won this medal and now she's like 2026, here she goes.
And I am so happy. I knew she, you know, had said stuff about retiring and I was bracing myself for it, and when I saw that tweet where she said she wanted to continue to 2026, I was like, life is worth living.
She was like the drop of like fresh air throughout like the hell that was like the post free skate for the women's.
Yeah, we talked about how bad the post, you know, free skate thing was, but like there are endless images of like her with the brightest smile, which she deserved to have.
Literally like endless smiles, her and Wakaba hugging, like with, oh my God, that like just, it's really like amazing you think about, like especially with Wakaba and Kaori too, like that Kaori is the first Japanese women since Mao to podium at the Olympics, the fourth Japanese woman overall to podium at the Olympics, and Wakaba was the only woman here to land two triple axels. Like, they are carrying on Mao's legacy,
which was once again the triple axel, you know, first landed in competition by Midori.
Yeah,
like they are really continuing on this legacy.
Yeah, they are amazing. I can't wait to see them both in the 2026 Olympics, hopefully both on the podium. Also, their friendship is the cutest.
The way Kaori immediately, like, ran off to, you know, like, after the ceremony to wrap her flag around Wakaba.
Yeah, it was absolutely cute, the cutest thing. I want to speak kind of briefly on Kaori's growth, because she was also on the Olympic team for Pyeongchang. But back then, she was, like, the underdog of the Japanese women's team, because it was her first senior season. She had just come off of a junior world medal. We saw her compete at Skate America. She did really well. And then she did super well at Japanese Nationals. And there was two spots. And she ended up getting the spot over Wakaba, which a lot of people at the time were not happy with. But she went out there. She finished sixth at Pyeongchang. And she's improved that to a bronze medal here. And I'm just really proud that she's, like, been trying her hardest to, like, continue to improve. I, like, rewatched Amelie the other day, her Amelie program, and, like, you can compare that to, like, as much as I can't even say I hate her pre-program anymore, because it's just the girl boss power, right?
Because her, yeah, her
but,
power.
But, like, you can watch, you watched Amelie and you watch her here, and, like, she's always been an amazing technician. Like, her jumps have always, she's always had, like, amazing jumping technique. Her jumps are huge. She, like, one jump is halfway across the ice. Like, when will the judges just give her +5 GOE on her double axels by default? But you can definitely see, like, how she's really improved from, like, a performance perspective. She's, like, gotten a lot more comfortable on the ice. She's had, like, a lot of, like, ups and downs in this past quad, but she's, like, really steadily proven herself.
And she's, like, never lost her positive energy along the way.
Yeah, she is so great.
Kaori went up to the judges and is like, I'm going to gaslight gatekeep girl boss you so hard.
But yeah, like, her score here, she got a 233.13. It's just 0.04 points below what Ada got at Worlds in last season. And this Kaori did this without a quad, without the triple axel. She did this on pure technique.
She did say that she wants to go back to training quads. I believe she was training a quad toe.
She was training a quad toe. Did not go well. But she wants to train a quad toe and a quad loop.
I support her training them healthily. And like Wakaba, you know, I want to state how proud I am of her that, you know, she held her ground, especially going into the free program in medal contention. She held her ground against the pressure, performing against, you know, both the Russian girls with quads and an athlete caught doping to put out those two beautiful, clean programs.
Like, she skated last in the short, and, like, I was very worried that the pressure would get to her, but it didn't. Play her reactions to her short score and her free score.
Look at her face throughout the post free program and you'll see what true joy looks like.
I do want to like say one comment that she made in the press con was that she saw her score and she didn't expect a podium, and she scored a 233 and she didn't expect that to podium. It is absolutely ridiculous what the sport has conditioned some of these women to believe. But yeah, the women's event, a lot of it was extremely devastating and heartbreaking, but there were still like really great skaters that went out there and put their heart on the ice, and they should still be celebrated. At the end of the day, like, all of these skaters deserve better than like what the sport has handed to them.
We will never stop trying to support them and give that to them.
Hopefully this situation will bring about some change to the sport, and greater scrutiny will be brought upon not just the Russians, but like all the skaters who, and all the judges, and ultimately help make the sport more fair for everybody competing in it. It's a really difficult situation to be in, but we really like, it's not hopeless, and it's things like Kaori Sakamoto and her reactions and like literally every single photo of her just like smiling and being so excited. Watching her get her medal this morning was amazing, and was like, yes, this is what figure skating is about. So we want to see improvements in the sport in many, many ways, and we'll see what the ISU ends up doing for reform. They usually do some reformation of the sport, whether it's rules or base values or regulations, at the end of every Olympic quad. So we'll see how the situation will impact that. But
you know, for now, when you're depressed about the state of figure skating, think about Kaori Sakamoto.
Thank you for listening. We hope to see you again for our next episode. Thanks to our transcribing and quality control team, Evie, as always, for editing, and Gab for graphic design. If you want to get in touch with us, please feel free to contact us via our website, indolopodcast.com, or on our Twitter. You can find our episodes on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. And once again, I'd like to remind you that all our first sources for this episode will be found on our website.
If you enjoyed the show and you want to help support the team, please consider making a donation to us on our coffee page. And we would like to give a huge thank you to all the listeners who have contributed to our team and supported us thus far. You can find the links to all our social media pages and our coffee on our website as well. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving a rating and a review if you enjoyed the show. Thank you for listening. Our next episode will be Paris, the final event. Thank you for listening. This has been Carr.
And Yogita. Talk to you later.
Goodbye. I love you, Kaori. You're the best.
Kaori Sakamoto.
Kaori Sakamoto. Queen, my final life. Message. Goodbye.